This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Not Guilty.
You had that one planned.
No, actually, it just came to me 5 seconds ago. Go ahead.
And Beans.
I'm usually caught with my pants down on this. And, you know, I always remember I'm sitting there and you go, okay, here we go. A couple seconds of silence. And then I realize, oh, damn, I forgot to think of a name.
You did a good job today.
Hey, you know, it's obvious. Today was self-evident.
Yeah. You know, obviously we can't. First of all, I am so happy that I'm sitting in my normal captain's chair right now with my normal microphone and normal sound. Yeah.
We need sound effects. That's what we need. If I can do anything to contribute to the show from over here, we got to try to find a way where I can contribute by being like your Fred Norris in some kind of a way where I have a soundboard in front of me and the sounds actually make it onto the show.
Or you're like Producer Joe.
We need audience sounds and we need laugh tracks and stuff like that. That would be fun.
Anything that you play that I can, I will figure that out. We need to figure that out. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm happy to be back here. And you know, listen, we were talking this morning about what we're going to talk about today. And obviously we record this podcast a little earlier in the day for broadcast and editing and stuff out on at 5 o'clock. And one of the guys at Radio Influence said, you guys want to hold off today, see what happens? And I'm like, no. No, I don't.
What are we waiting to see?
You know what happens at 1:30.
What's at 1:30?
At 1:30, they're going to be voting to see if they should move the vote to the Senate for Kavanaugh.
Well, Jeff Flake already said that he's a yes vote. So who is going to be the hurdle then?
Nobody really. I mean, yeah. Nobody really. Honestly, I think, and we're going to talk, and you know, there's no way we could do this show today without dedicating a huge part of it to Kavanaugh because it's still on everybody's minds, and I truly need. There's so many facets to this thing, Frank. Did you obviously watch this whole thing yesterday, right?
I was watching from 10 to 6:45. Yep.
Hmm. Well, so was I, as everybody knows. And I was really trying to live tweet this out for the folks who were at work and couldn't really, you know, couldn't pay attention to it, or just to even memorialize this amazing. This is sort of like a pivotal point in American history, in my opinion. And I don't think that's conjecture or exaggeration with what's happened. And we're not even going to necessarily. There's a lot of. How do you want to do this? I'm like really consider. Like, how do you want to do this? Do you want to first go? Let's just talk about their opening statements in comparison. How about that?
Go ahead.
Well, okay. So for me personally, Dr. Ford's opening statement, it didn't appear to me as though she was lying, right? But it was too much, in my opinion. The voice, the squeaky voice, the need for caffeine, the kind of like overly
as if the adrenaline of having the entire country watch you was not enough. She needed an upper.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, she needs coffee? Really? Like, okay. So she goes through a thing and I made like a projection yesterday morning. And I said, here's what's going to happen. And pretty much everything I said that was going to happen happened. She did her opening statement and they brought in Mitchell, which I thought, what did you think about the fact that they brought in the woman prosecutor?
I thought that it was just another way of really realizing how far we've sunk, that Republicans needed to go to that length to be able to neutralize what would assuredly have been a major mainstream media talking point, that these white men on this council, these conservative white old men, were badgering a witness, a woman, by merely asking reasonable questions. that they actually had to go and they had to recruit a female translator, that they had to actually ask reasonable questions about this these alleged incidents and these alleged events through a female proxy, just to be able to avoid certain narratives from taking control of the entire thing. I just thought that it smacks of everything that we're living through, just in general, it just where the culture has degraded. That's really it for me.
I think they're still assigning the media too much power, for as good as they did yesterday, which I think they really did a good job yesterday. They're still assigning the media too much power, because in my humble opinion, the country and even moderate liberals, like real actual liberals, were disgusted by this pony show, disgusted by it. And so, great, they made their point, I think, even more that the Democrats are crazy. And, you know, I try to stay nonpartisan here, but let's just be honest. It's kind of hard to do at this point. The Democrats are crazy. And I think the fact that they had to do something like that spoke more to how crazy they are than necessarily how afraid the Republicans were. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
OK, so they had this woman in Mitchell, and the question she was asking in the beginning, they started off really slow, and it was starting to concern me, because this is not how this woman is used to questioning a witness. And the Democrats start, and all they do is praise her for her courage and coming forward. And, you know, it was just ridiculous. Like, they couldn't ask her any questions, because if they would have asked her any questions, they might have uncovered something that wasn't solid or something like that. So how many people asked questions? Like, none. No Democrats.
None. There was no questions asked. It was, and not only that, but they spent time. I forgot who it was in particular, but there was a few of them. Not only just saying, hey, but first of all, let me just say, especially that marble mouth from New Jersey, Cory Booker.
You mean faux Spartacus or Spartacus wannabe?
It's Spartacus. I mean, that's funny. It's good. You know, but he's such an awful. He's almost as bad as an actor as that passive aggressive. I can't say the things I want to say anywhere. I can't say the things I really want to say anywhere. It's not safe. I have to go into a broom closet to be able to say what I really want to say and speak. Things I want to say should never be whispered in the dark. But in any case, to watch these people not only never ask a question, but just praise her for the courage. And then, of course, back up, even throw support for her in ways where they try to apologize for the reasons why her memory is foggy on even the most basic details.
Yeah. You know, the fact that we're going to skip around a little, just let this conversation go where it goes, because the fact that you bring that up just then makes me, what I found super interesting was how she presented herself as sort of like this quasi little innocent schoolgirl, right? That was her thing. She was really kind of ignorant and naive and scared. And, you know, she was just, oh, my God, I can't believe that I have to do this. This is just not what I expected at all.
That's her voice. I would really love for you never to do that impression ever again. Actually.
Yeah, it was really grating on my nerves. And it's like every one of them sounds like that. You listen to the Project Veritas videos. Listen to the Project Veritas videos and listen to the Socialist Democrats of America, or whatever freaking organization they're in, and listen to how they talk. They're all like, yeah, well, we really think that this is so important. And it's like,
That's how Ocasio-Cortez speaks. That's how that woman that showed up on, I forgot what the hell this guy's name was, but she showed up to talk about how eating meat is eating meat is a way to perpetuate the patriarchy. And when they talk, they're very smiley. They're very calm because, of course, they have an understanding of the world that is so far beyond anything we can comprehend. And of course, it is the truth and the way. They are the new priests and priestesses of the world. So they say, you know, what we need to realize, they say things like that. What we need to understand, what you need to realize. No, I don't need to realize anything. You shut your damn mouth. You know, so this is just.
Oh. I'm going to patronize you, but I'm going to do it in such a way that you can't attack me for it.
I got to say one thing. What they're doing with Christine Ford is this, and I don't just, like many people out there, I don't deny that she's gone through something. In fact, I think that what she's gone through is probably a little bit more on the MK Ultra side of things than anything.
A lot of people are saying that. Don't let me forget to get back to what my point was before you when you finish.
Well, then finish it, because
you're gonna forget.
No, I won't, because I was going to talk about it tonight on my show, but so I already know what I want to say. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I found it very, very, very interesting how she started throwing out medical jargon for how the brain works.
Oh, yeah.
Did you not think it was weird that she started talking about the hypothalamus and how the chemicals interact inside your brain and blah, blah, blah? Like, she uses those very intelligent words and makes her sound very smart. And then she's like, well, I needed an extra door.
I can't. But I'm also housing strangers from Google. Yeah, I'm scared to death of strangers and flying, but I fly all the time, and I have strangers living in my house.
It's good because we're able to house some Google interns from down the road.
I'm actually glad that you said that before I said what I had to say, because this is the other thing that really gets me. Of course, no matter – I don't watch television anymore, so I don't care what the hell the network is. I don't need it. Of course, what I have seen coming out of people is consistently, she's a credible witness.
No.
Credible. Here's what needs to be really – really just stamped down by somebody. The reason why somebody like Christine Ford is a credible witness is because she is a woman of intelligence. She's an intelligent woman. She's sane enough. She has a deep educational background. She is PhD. She's a doctor of certain things. She's a professor. She has attained a certain level of social status. That is the reason why whenever somebody like Christine Ford says something, she is credible enough to be able to at least listen to what she has to say and consider what's going on. Aside from that, aside from the credibility of her character and what she's been able to do with her life and what she's been able to accomplish within her life, the evidence that you need to corroborate certain claims for them to be credible, for them to be pursued, is not there. So whether or not she is somebody that you can look at and say, look at what she's accomplished, this is a woman that we should take seriously when she speaks because she's accomplished so much and she is an intellectual of some sort and this and that, fine. But the problem is that she's saying something that has no corroborating evidence. All the witnesses are on the opposite side of the fence. They say it didn't happen. They don't know Kavanaugh. They never partied with him. She's standing all alone. The reason why all of this is nonsense is because all you're going by is what we can tell about her profession and the way that she's lived her life. That is the evidence that should take down a man and destroy an entire life's work.
And we have no way to know how she lived her life because she scrubbed her social media. She scrubbed her yearbooks from the internet. Nobody knows anything about this woman. And not to mention, she's a PhD who struggled academically for years after this attack.
Yeah. And she's very, very well employed. First of all, there is already a thorough Wikipedia page for her.
Oh, really?
I wanted to look into her. I wanted to look into where she's currently working and what she does, like, professionally. And the first thing that popped up was a brand new Wikipedia page that was already updated to include all of the events of yesterday.
Mm. You know, it's funny because somebody in the House of Representatives was very busy on Wikipedia yesterday. Doxing senators that spoke out against Ford.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They were docs. Three of them. Graham. Hold on. I just got this.
Just this whole anonymous thing?
Yeah, but, you know, Republican senators doxed on Wikipedia by someone from the House of Representatives. It came from inside the House of Representatives. Graham, Mike Lee, and Orrin Hatch.
Hmm.
Anyway, I digress. But, you know, listen, you could look at me and say I'm being insensitive to a woman who was abused. I have no tolerance or patience for this nonsense anymore. She is a victim, like many of the Republicans are saying, because I truly believe, Frank, that her counsel, who was recommended to her by none other than Senator Dianne Feinstein, the Chinese spy, was hiding things from her. Or she's just really ignorant.
She didn't even know who was paying for her. She didn't know that her counsel was pro bono. She didn't know who paid for the polygraph. She didn't know what was going on. Seriously, all of this was set up for her, seemingly without her knowledge, unless she's lying, which brings up my biggest point of what we learned about yesterday. All this stuff is going on, and it really just comes down to this one thing. There's no credible evidence here, but there is political gratification at the end of this. Mm-hmm. That's all that is going on with people. She's a credible witness, because if she is taken at her word and we destroy and burn the world down at the word of a woman or anybody who just points a finger at somebody and says, get them, government, get them, FBI. If that is what we have devolved to, then, I mean, it's all over. That is there is everybody pursuing political gratification, and it is a cycle that will never end until, of course, it's time for punching to start.
Agreed. I want to talk about the lie detector test, actually.
And we have to talk about what we really learned about Dianne Feinstein and the predicament that she put herself and Christine. There is a really interesting choice that needs to be made right now about what we learned about yesterday with the withholding of information and leaking. Who's lying? Because it's going to either mean we'll get into it.
Go for it. Yeah, no, there's a lot surrounding her, and how embarrassed she was talking to Kavanaugh was a big flag for me. Let's talk about this really quickly. So the polygraph, right? Everybody was like, she took a polygraph. Polygraphs don't mean anything. They're not admissible in court. We know all the background on polygraphs, but a couple of conflicting things. The guy who gave the polygraph, who she did not hire, was on Fox News explaining the polygraph and how he only asked her two questions on the polygraph. Christine Ford comes in and she says, yeah, I took a polygraph. It was very long. I cried through the entire thing, and it was the day of my grandmother's funeral. Okay. And then Mitchell starts going on her about that. I'm sorry. And her counsel steps in, and it's this big hubbub, and they get all blah, 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 blah. And in the interim of this, we have Sheila Jackson Lee slipping envelopes to the guy behind the scenes. That's a whole nother story that we can get into. But this polygraph that they're trying to put in, they're trying to put in the results into evidence, right? They're putting an exhibit in, and they're saying, here's the results, but they're not putting in the background information behind it. And not to mention, how is this woman taking a polygraph? First of all, she's supposedly petrified of flying and is about to get on a plane. Second of all, she just attended the funeral of a grandmother who must have been 115 years old. I mean, how old was the grandma? Think about that. How old is she? How old is Ford? Do you know?
No, I think she's younger than 55. She's either 55 or younger, which.
Let me see. I'm going to look it up right now because I didn't. She's 51. So I guess it's plausible.
She's a 51-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Oh, she looked at least 62.
She did. I guess it's plausible that her grandmother could have passed away if she lived a very long life. I guess.
Or they started having babies early. Who knows?
I mean, she was born in 1967. The grandmother story just doesn't sit with me. And then she walked out. Oh, maybe it was the day after. Who forgets that? Especially if your grandmother lived to be 103. Do you forget that stuff? If it was just months prior,
Maybe you forget it if you were rightfully drugged up the way that most people who suffer from extreme anxiety are when they have to go on a plane. Maybe she was hopped up on Xanax. You know, if you think about that, too, nobody brought that up, really. Maybe they did. I didn't see it. But if you have that kind of anxiety problem, you hate flying. I have a friend of mine who has mild anxiety with flying. And when he started having to fly for business and he has no traumatic past, He was given low doses of Xanax to be able to just, you know, chill.
I don't believe she had a problem flying.
Well, her flight history tells us that she didn't have a real problem flying if she was able to muscle through what she did. But I mean, for her to not remember funeral dates, I don't remember the date that my grandfather's funeral, my grandmother's funeral. I know the day that they died.
It's different.
But it's different. And here's another thing. I would know what day the funeral was if it was just last month.
And if it was on the same day you took a polygraph for something of this magnitude.
At an airport hotel.
I mean, really? You know? Listen. And then Mitchell. So Mitchell starts off really slow with her question. She's asking all her questions and everything. And I'm like, all right, she's going to get somewhere with this. She's laying the groundwork right now. If it were a like O.J. Simpson trial where she had all the time in the world to question this woman, we would definitely get some conflicts and some substance out of this. And you could tell that Ford didn't want to lie. She was under oath. So she did answer questions some ways that were very suspicious, including when she accidentally let slip that Feinstein and her had spoken about not releasing her name until right before the hearing. And Mitchell pounced all over that. And then her attorneys got in and kind of got distracted and she ran out of time. And but I want everybody to remember something, okay? This was not a trial, first of all. Second of all, this hearing was not for any other reason, technically, than for the Senate Judiciary Committee to go through the process of hearing these charges out. These accusations out. It wasn't for the American people, in quotes. It wasn't because, you know, we were trying to, you know what I mean? The reason for this was for those senators in that room.
Yep.
So with that perspective in mind, even though it turned into like this crazy nation-gripping drama, it didn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Like it was basically, where is Mitchell going with these questions and when is she going to finish and how is she going to get there? And then time ran out and, you know, it was just the Democrats grandstanding about courage. And I'm like, well, I want to see what they do to this poor man. And Feinstein appears to have ruined, at least she shares some of the burden. OK, I'm not saying she's innocent by any stretch and I don't feel sorry for her either, but it looks like Feinstein and operatives on that side of the aisle really ruined this woman's life. For no other reason than grandstanding and political tyranny they wanted.
Yeah.
So what do you want to say about Feinstein?
Well, listen, the biggest thing about this that I'm sitting there, I know that a lot of people caught on to it too, but when you, and you're talking about the line of questioning with Christine Ford, by what's her name again? Rachel Mitchell?
Yeah, Mitchell.
Rachel Mitchell.
Who looked like a nun. Didn't she look like a nun?
Yeah. Yeah, she did. She looked like a, but she didn't look like a nun because I was taught by nuns in my elementary school and actually into, I had one nun teacher in high school as well, Sister Robert. We used to call her Sister Bob behind her back. And the, she this one looked like she wouldn't have been a theology teacher more than she would have been a computer teacher, you know, like, you know, Rachel Mitchell, I feel like she would have been the nun that that taught basic computer science or something like that.
Maybe. You know, I mean, she was really effective, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. No. She was very kind, very accommodating, very clear in her questioning. And I was following along very easily. I mean, like I said, her presence there was sad because we know why she had to be there.
I wouldn't want to get pulled over by that woman, though.
No. I wouldn't want to mess with her at all. But here's what we got to. She very, very clearly got to the point where Christine Ford said she wished to remain anonymous. And she brought her complaint. She brought her testimony. She brought her story to one spot and one spot only.
No, two spots.
Which ones?
She went to WAPO at the same time as she went to the congressperson.
Right. That's right.
Which is very interesting. And we'll unpack that, too.
That, yeah. But the thing here, though. And as far as Washington Post, what do they say again as far as whether or not how far they brought that? Because when it comes to Feinstein and how long she was sitting on this and what she was putting up behind the scenes, waiting for weeks, helping, making sure that she was lawyered up, keeping this from Brett Kavanaugh, waiting until the 11th hour. What we have here now is who is going to be the one that gets the blame? Is Christine Ford going to be the one that has to face some kind of perjury charge because she was under oath? Or is Dianne Feinstein going to take Dianne Feinstein or one of her staffers going to take the fall for something else?
She already threw Ford under the bus in an open hearing yesterday.
This is what I'm talking about. It created such an amazing situation where they brought, first of all, both Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Ford, I likened them to disposable wipes. They're flushable wipes to Senate Democrats. Both of them were being used and abused. They wanted to dispose of both of them. They don't really care about either or. It's all political gratification. But what it really ended up being that they so publicly have to now make a choice between saving their own asses, Diane Feinstein in particular, and throwing their star witness under the bus. That, I think, was one of the biggest stories that was underreported out of the whole day's event yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we can also talk in this same vein about the story itself and how it doesn't hold water and how many holes are in it and why nobody really seemed to want to get back to the point outside of Cruz asking one simple question. She goes to the media. She goes to the congresspeople. She says all of a sudden people started showing up at her house. Now, we know that there are WhatsApp messages between her and the Washington Post because they were referenced inside the hearing. And she supposedly goes back to the Post and says to them, the Washington Post, and says, I'm going to go to another outlet if you guys don't want to pick this up. And then all of a sudden they get back to her and they start saying, okay, we'll take the story. Now, why were they so hesitant in the first place is my first question. And my second question is, where did they get her name that they could show up at her university as a reporter in her classroom and outside of her house talking to her dog from the window? Who leaked the name before the letter came out? It could have only been, like you're saying, three different people. And the Washington Post didn't have the letter until it was leaked. Am I correct with that?
I believe so. But now I'm fuzzy because I completely forgot about the Washington Post side of the story before you brought it up.
It's very clear that a few things, and then we'll get into dissecting Kavanaugh a little bit. Number one, Feinstein clearly sat on this. She had the opportunity to bring this up. Whether the woman wanted to remain anonymous or not didn't matter because she had the opportunity in several closed confidential sessions with Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats there and private conversations with Kavanaugh and private interviews to say, we've got these allegations. The woman doesn't want a public, you know, circus around this. Let's please work together to figure out what's happening here. We'll just keep it confidential within the committee. And then when we decide what the end result of this is, we can take it from there. That's not what happened at all. So it was obviously a political hit job. Diane Feinstein looks like she looks hard. She comes out of this smelling like trash on both sides. And I keep on going back to the fact that this woman has been slowly and systematically destroyed by Democrats for the past 2 years. She was not endorsed by Democrats for a re-election. They're throwing out the Chinese spy story. She's been really attacked by her own party. So I want to know who's got the strings on Diane Feinstein making her do this stuff. Because when Kavanaugh addressed her yesterday, it was clear she was really uncomfortable, and you could tell she felt horrible about it. You could tell.
Yeah.
Somebody's their hand up her butt.
Oh, no. The only thing that she was missing, once the opening statements were over and once she had the first crack at asking Brett Kavanaugh some questions and having to actually address him, knowing that half of his opening statement was directly in response to what she perpetrated with all of her colleagues on the committee and her colleagues that are not on the committee that are working behind the scenes like the puppet masters that they are. All she missed was a dunce cap.
Yeah,
that's the only thing that she was missing was the dunce cap because she had crumbled into herself. She's kind of swaying and twisting in her seat. She was hunched over again. She was it looked very, very weak. And of course, from there on in, all of the questions were lame. All of the questions were more embarrassing than the one before it. And I know many of them probably just wanted to go the hell home.
Yeah. And before we get into Kavanaugh, but because I want to talk about everything that happened there yesterday, there's so many little intricacies inside of that I don't think a lot of people have had the time to even marinate on. I want to talk about Vivid Seats, Frank.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I need some of those seats because if the Yankees get a home game out of this wild card situation, I'm definitely going to get to that stadium. I will cancel any guest I had for that night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's good because Vivid Seats is an online event ticket marketplace which is dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experiences that last a lifetime. With Vivid Seats, listeners can watch their favorite teams and artists perform in person. And Vivid Seats helps fans find their seat to any of their favorite live events, including sports, concerts, theater, and more. Vivid Seats offers great prices and an easy purchasing experience. And with the podcast code INFLUENCE, listeners can receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats, which would go a really long way for Yankees wildcard tickets, Frank.
I know. I
it's not as bad as the NFL, but they do kind of rape you on the cost there.
I know. It's, you know, whatever. I just got to get into the stadium. Any way I can do it. I'm going to parachute in.
There you go. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Enter promo code INFLUENCE to receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. And all Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by 100% guarantee.
Guarantee
on those tickets. It's a top source for tickets to all the live events you want to go to. And you can sort them by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, which is freaking fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, get 10% off. I am so bad today. 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats by going to putting in the code INFLUENCE in the cart. VividSeats.com. And there we go.
There you go.
I'm thankful for Vivid Seats. I always, you know, the problem I always have with ticket apps is that, not even really ticket apps, but, you know, services, is you could never pick where you wanted to sit. Like, they showed you, like, sit in this section, but you could never go down and pick your seat.
At some point, you get desperate enough to see an event that you'll take whatever you can. But to have any kind of choice in the matter is definitely a leg up.
Amen. Thank you, Vivid Seats, for sponsoring our show. We absolutely love you guys. Check out VividSeats.com. So, Kavanaugh, my dear.
Mm-hmm.
I sat there, and I didn't know what to expect out of him when he walked in. I was crying throughout almost the entire opening statement for 45 minutes.
Well, I didn't cry throughout the entire thing, but I definitely choked up in a few places. I was watching with Lauren, and we were both just taken aback. And then, of course, not to be crude, but I never, ever, ever, ever want to be able to say ever again in my life that I reached sexual arousal at the hands of Lindsey Graham ever again. I never, ever want to be able to say this again in my life.
Lindsey Graham's hands, really? At the hands of Lindsey Graham? That's what you're going to say right now.
Lauren and I were sitting there, and when Lindsey Graham had his 4.5 minutes of, I don't even know what was, well, he was, something was speaking through him. Okay. Ever since, you can say what you want. I think a lot of people have drawn this conclusion. It looks like not the strings have been cut. It looks like Lindsey Graham finally had the umbilical cord cut. What the hell has gotten into him since John McCain died?
Look, all I'm saying is it's very clear that there was something going on there. And just to give you guys a little foreshadow, or it may be out already, I don't know, it's 5 o'clock listening to this for you. I'm doing a video before and after. I have pulled clips from before McCain and after McCain, and I'm going to put them side by side, and your mind will be blown. It is amazing. Amazing, the difference. Things about that kind of lend in that same vein in regards to what Kavanaugh said in his opening. The Clintons were brought up in there. Did you find that interesting?
I thought so, yes.
I was like, He was involved in Foster and Ken Starr and all that. So I found it really interesting that the Clintons were invoked inside of his opening statements. And he basically defiantly said, you're not getting rid of me. And then we had a Clinton former spokesperson come out on Twitter and basically threaten that he will not serve a lifetime appointment. Now, that is scary. I don't like things like that.
No.
I mean, look at how he's entering the court. They better have ridiculous security on that man.
There was a lot of things going on yesterday that you can write several books on it.
Yeah.
You can write several books on the body language, on the comments, the line of questioning, the things that didn't match up. the source of Dr. Christine Ford's testimony and her memory really are. You know, where does her trauma come from? You know, and to be able to say, well, I love how, and still, these people are supposed to be, you know, warriors for the truth and warriors for justice and all that. And they sit there bludgeoning Brett Kavanaugh, the only one who's able to speak with enormous amounts of detail. He's able to account for exactly what he was doing, where he was, the people he was with. He had calendars from 1982. Meanwhile, his accuser is standing there, meek and quivering, and she has recollection of some things. She very staunchly doesn't know certain things. It's very easy.
Not only that, but all the witnesses that she say were there have come out on the side of Kavanaugh.
Exactly. It's like, so the only evidence she did have, she doesn't have. And meanwhile, these people, these Democrats will sit there and say, are you saying that we should not believe her? Are you saying that we should not believe her? Like, wait a second. Why do you need me to ask this question? I'm telling you who I am, where I've been and what I've done and what I haven't done. And I'm telling you that all the evidence that she claims that she would need, all the evidence that she would need to be able to have credibility is not there. So why the hell am I? Why the hell is he? I'm speaking as Brett Kavanaugh. Well, now I'm speaking as me again. Why the hell is he even being asked to make that distinction between who should be believed or not? That's not even what the question is here. Why are you believing somebody who claims that something happened, but she doesn't have any of the evidence? Meanwhile, the accuser has more than enough to refute it.
Not only that, but let's quickly remember that one of their very own, Keith Ellison, has a woman who has been trying desperately to show the world what she's got in the way of evidence that he's abused her, and there have been crickets about it. Yeah. The double standard is ridiculous. It really is.
And he's not a staffer right there. He was second in line behind Tom Perez to take control of the DNC itself.
And he's running for, like we talked about last week. So, you know, that's that. But you're absolutely right. It was sick to sit there. Now, let me be honest about Kavanaugh, okay? I didn't really feel comfortable with the way he answered some of those questions. I was like, ooh, Kavanaugh, you really sound bad. He was very defensive about his drinking, which I think he should have just been like, yeah, I drank in high school. Absolutely. Not like, did you? Did you ever do that? And, you know, I think it's kind of silly to the fact that he answered that he never blacked out from drinking, I don't know if that's true.
They never blacked out. You can be drunk and not black out.
No. You've never like... When they say, well, I guess he was having a hard time with blackout. You've never been so drunk that you passed out?
No, well, listen, but that's what he was saying. You get drunk, you drink, you nurture a buzz for a whole day. First of all, spending the whole day or spending a night drinking is exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so there's nothing that you can be moderately drunk, you can be buzzed, and you can still just sit down on a couch and all of a sudden you're sleeping before you know what happened. As far as being blackout, I mean, blackout does not equate to being unconscious. Blackout means you do not, you are actually physically in motion. But you are not there. There's nobody behind the wheel. The engine is running there, but nobody's really behind the wheel. And you can do things on your feet, blackout drunk. You do not remember the next day. That does not equate to being passed out sleeping, blacking out.
Right. Well, that's the distinction that I think he was trying to get to. And I think that nobody really understood that definition. Like, I was kind of unclear about what they meant. Like, I was. And, you know, he said a gazillion times, I like beer. We drink beer. We like beer. It was really funny. I was actually laughing by the end of it. And I made a point to say, I think we can determine that Brett Kavanaugh liked beer and still likes beer, which is fine. I mean, it's not illegal to drink beer. It's illegal to do it underage, but it's not illegal to do it. And I think it was just speaking to the culture back then. I mean, didn't they just change the drinking age at that point from 18 to 21? So it was a little different of a time. And it's not a big deal. Like, everybody's, well, listen, we don't want to give a bad, and, you know, we don't want to influence high school kids to think it's okay to be drinking, because it's not. But the fact that he...
You don't have to influence them. They're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, I guess.
In fact, if they knew it was cool, they wouldn't... If the parents thought it was cool, they wouldn't do it. They do it because it's not right.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But where was I even going with that? You're right. But I lost my point now. Somebody help me. Take the wheel.
You're talking about how the times have changed, and at that point,
Yeah. So just like somebody had mentioned, the fact that he drank in high school doesn't make him a sexual predator. Why do we even have to talk about this?
Well, they just
flatulence. Farts.
They were talking about, there's questions about fart jokes. There's questions about barfing. This is the kind of trial that I would have witnessed if something was brought up in National Junior Honor Society meetings in sixth grade. You know, he made a fart joke and blah, blah, blah. He drew a penis on the inside of a textbook. I saw it with my own two eyes.
I thought it was really funny that that one, I think it was, I forget, I think it wasn't Durbin, it was White House maybe, that brought up the FFFFF like Michael Avenatti did through the 4chan troll.
Yeah, the best.
Oh my gosh. And he's like, Squee, who will ever go down, Squee, wherever you are, I love your nickname, Squee. And off.
And listen, that is right now. That's the smoking gun between. Isn't that the smoking gun between the 4chan troll now? The definition of what the five F's were.
Yeah, because that's. But the 4chan troll came out after Avenatti had said that.
Right. That's right.
So while that would be very interesting, so let's tell people who may not know, because some people may not. There was somebody who came out on 4chan and said that he and his girlfriend called Avenatti and planted that story in Avenatti's wheelhouse about the abuse and the FFFFF and what it actually meant. And
the gangbangs.
And the gangbangs. Yeah. And then got all the way to the point where they were trying to pay her $20,000 and get her on CNN, to where she said, forget it. And then it came out that he was trolled and he locked his Twitter account down, and he's been dark ever since. I think at this point, there are only a few Democrats that would even want to be seen in the same room with Avenatti, but they will work with him behind the scenes.
Well, they had upped it. They claim, well, the 4chan post, they claim that he upped it from $20,000 to $75,000, promised that she would be a national hero. If you come out and talk about this, they wanted to get her on with Anderson Cooper and also somebody else at CNN. And from there, that's where they backed out, and that is when allegedly on the 25th of September, his Twitter account went private. Now, it's since then, it has gone back up again, and he denied that he got trolled, but there are certain things in this account that really are unreal to me now, because where did he get the idea that the five F's meant everything that they did about, you know, finger this, you know, bang that, whatever.
Yeah, so stupid.
Forget this. Either way. And then, of course, asking about what the Devil's Triangle was, which was a drinking game with quarters. But they were led to believe it was an allusion to a threesome.
Well, the fact that even made it into the hearing made me laugh.
Oh, absolutely. But they're talking about fart jokes. Everything was ridiculous. And then, but then he goes, the thing with Avenatti, what I want to know is now, at that point, if this is really true, then this Julie Swetnick woman, who has the craziest of the allegations, do you think that this is a woman who really just took the $75,000 or took a payout at that point just to put a name down on the affidavit and not to make it to not make Avenatti look like an idiot for being trolled? Because he had already been teasing the gangbang story before this whole thing happened. And now, of course, that was discredited in the most vociferous of ways. So I don't know what the hell this is. You know, there might be some still shred of truth to that whole anonymous story.
All I know is when I go to Avenatti's Twitter, I see you are blocked from following Michael Avenatti and viewing Michael Avenatti. Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's a badge of honor with him. I asked him some really tough, honest questions several months ago, and he blocked me.
No time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Nobody.
So Kavanaugh's section ended, and I was like, oh my gosh, I am mentally and physically exhausted at this point. Like, I was done. My brain was mush. My fingers were mush. But, and I was emotionally spent the day, not her, him. I think it was him that made me more emotional, only because of how emotional he was. And you know, that's somebody, like my dad was saying this morning, he's got to be, you know, like a saint to be very, very impartial. Because he knows more than he's letting on. When he gets confirmed and he's on that court, he's going to be a fighter for what's right.
Oh, at this point? Yeah. I saw this one idiot, Jennifer Rubin. I mean, listen, you talk about moron. You talk about low IQ invertebrate. Jennifer Rubin, she said this yesterday. She said, "This will not end if Kavanaugh is confirmed. The new Congress will call and compel testimony from other witnesses." Oh, yeah, the new Congress is going to waste time on this. And then she says, "A Democrat Congress could well vote to impeach." Oh, good. Oh, great. Great. Yeah, more wasted time. That's really going to do well for them in the polls every 2 years. Then he says bar complaints will be lodged versus him. The Bar Association is a liberal entity that has given him nothing but stellar.
Until today.
Unbelievable.
Until this morning.
Yeah, what'd they say this morning?
We should postpone his confirmation until after an FBI investigation. Does that sound familiar to you? I wonder how many liberal donors are threatening to pull their money. Or not, which is, you know what I mean? Jennifer Rubin is disgusting. She just put out another tweet a few hours ago. "With him screaming and interrupting senators, I couldn't imagine him putting his hand over someone's mouth."
Oh, yeah. Well, she's just like Ted Lieu.
Oh,
Ted,
God.
Who said, you know, with how angry he is, can you imagine how he is when he's drunk? I'm like, you slug bastard. And Jennifer Rubin went on to say to conclude, she said, "The next Democrat president will expand the court. Kavanaugh willing to burn it all, expand the court." They're talking about more than nine judges now. First of all, this should be like five judges. It should be three judges, to be honest. It means nothing. So you have to listen to this moron, because they want to expand the court, and why? I think they should just go full out now and propose that the Supreme Court should be expanded to 535 people. They should get rid of the legislative body. It should be the executive, and it should be a judicial branch of 535 judges instead of, you know, congressmen and women who actually make law enforced by courts. But this is what they see as lawmaking now. This is how they see governing. They want people, unelected people in black robes, to take basic vocabulary and give them new definitions to be able to plot a course, a legislative course for everybody else based on the political whims of the day. This is why I just want them to lose and lose so badly and in such a painful way. And I just want them to be ignored. I don't want anybody to follow along with what I want. I want everybody to do exactly what they want, separate from me. That's all I want. The Jennifer Rubins wants everybody to hitch on to her belt loop. That's what they want. And she wants to drag people in a direction she feels is good. And she'll really redefine everything that is about our country to be able to make that happen, or at least to plant that into the heads of the morons who think that she's worth listening to.
Wow. Boom.
Ugh.
Frank, I just sent you a message through Skype here.
Oh, let me see.
I think we should do something interesting right now. I think it'll be fun.
What the hell is this?
This is an interchange or a conversation between the brilliant and beautiful Molly Hemingway and Brian Stelter.
Oh.
And what I figured we would do is act it out, and you could read Stelter's part, and I'll do Molly.
Oh, you'll do Molly? Okay. All right, fine.
So basically, what this is Molly Hemingway tweeted something and Brian Stelter chimed in underneath, and she basically just like destroyed him. So I will read the part of Molly, although I may never be able to fill those shoes, and Frank will reduce himself to Stelter. Ready?
Okay. Let's see how these embeds are in order. This is the way that it went.
This is the way that it went.
Okay,
I'm Molly. Media performance on this Kavanaugh story has been disgusting and reprehensible. Something needs to be done. Where are the adults?
You work for one of the country's biggest, most powerful media outlets.
You work for a smaller and lesser one, but that's neither here nor there to what I'm saying.
LOL, I'm saying you should put away your broad brush. Hundreds of journalists are carefully and responsibly covering a really complicated story. Some of them are your colleagues. They're adults. I think you should give them a little credit in between your constant attacks.
This is a shameful moment in media coverage, and you cannot ignore or deny it. Well, you can, but you shouldn't. My goodness.
Then get specific about what's shameful instead of attacking the entire industry, including your colleagues at Fox. Heading to bed. Have a good night.
I've been specific for days in tweets and articles. I even flagged a thread for you to deal with in your function as CNN's media person. You simply cannot be for real right now, Brian. Be better than this. And that
thank
was
you.
It. That was it. Thank you so much for sacrificing your soul for that. That was so...
The best thing about that is when she goes, she says that you work for a smaller and lesser outlet, but that's neither here or there.
Yeah.
And he opens up with LOL as if he's not crying.
I know.
You know?
Like, not only that, but I'm really surprised that he granted so much power to the Federalist.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that made me laugh. I actually tweeted that and tagged you last week. I don't think you saw it.
Maybe I did. You tagged me on where? On Twitter?
Yeah.
It might have just gotten...
Your tweets are so funny.
I have all of your tweets. I get notifications about your tweets so that they don't get lost in the mix.
My God, yesterday must have driven you nuts.
No, it wasn't. I mean, yesterday was... I was using my tweet deck to be able to organize everything. Let me just tell you, it doesn't matter what the hell was going on. Yesterday was explosive. So, I mean, my mentions were just scrolling faster than I can see. Everybody was pumping out everything that they could. It was a full court press. We all had to do what we had to do. It was fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I love reading through your timeline sometimes. I go to your timeline just to laugh. Like, let's talk about Alyssa Milano for a second.
Ugh.
Did you see the video clip where she was outside of some senator's office banging on the door?
No.
I think I'm going to pause. Hold on. All right, so we're back here. I just wanted to show Frank this clip.
Gosh.
I'm going to link it in the show notes for everybody here. But basically, it's a clip of Alyssa Milano and a bunch of people.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of people, and they're chanting, open the door. Here are the stories.
I have a story to tell. You want to know what my story is? Alyssa Milano, nobody cares about her cleavage or Charmed reruns anymore. That's what it is. That's Alyssa Milano's story. Nobody cares about reruns of Charmed anymore. So she's trying to find another place to get her ass assimilated into. But it's just not working.
What I did, and I retweeted that, and I basically said, Charmed ended a few years back because it reminded me of a group of hags, like, chanting some spell.
Oh, yeah, her and her coven, they showed up.
Oh, Lord. And then she was there yesterday, and she got her phone taken away from her, and Thomas Wichter had a really interesting thread on... You saw that, right?
I think it was a great one.
What do you think about it, though? What do you think he's right?
As far as her being the evil that knows she's doing evil?
As far as her, like, scoping out that room.
Oh, I don't think I saw that. I saw him breaking down her reaction to Brett Kavanaugh referring to his daughters and how she, you know, she looks like a person who understands what she's caught up in and what she has pledged herself to is not a good cause, but she does it anyway. I saw that. Wichter, he starts he starts and completes at least 5 to 6 really compelling threads every 5 hours.
Agreed.
So, I mean, if you miss one, if you've seen one, you miss 3 others. That's just how it is.
No, I'm true. I agree. Oh, my gosh. Like, here's a funny one. Molly, who we were just referencing, says, just a quick heads up to Senate Democrats that I'm going to have a drink or two before I go to bed. Hope that's OK with y'all. And Thomas says they were all unconscious and covered with their own vomit when you wrote this. He's too much, Tom. He has a picture. Go ahead.
Talk to him. Do you have any like an inside connection with him? I always wanted to have him on. I know that he doesn't do public stuff, but then again, he did that thing with Roseanne. When does that come out?
I don't know. I see that his profile picture is hysterical. No, I don't. I don't talk to Thomas Wichter on the side. No, he doesn't talk to many people on the side. I do know that. As of yesterday, I know that he talks to Draw and Strike on the side, which is great. I think that they have a good little working relationship going. But I'm kind of like, I'm okay with not talking to people anymore. I don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah, less is better.
I'm going to just box myself and do what I do. Just box myself in a room and just work by myself forever.
Yeah, I think most people need to just really see the... they need to see the way that people really live. I think that once you start following somebody on the internet, whether it be through a channel that they run or something else, you tend to believe that this person's life is all. This is all that they are, that they don't have friends, they don't have family, they are in a room and they're constantly working on something and that's just what they do. You know, I mean, so that's why I love when these, you know, every once in a while you get somebody comes around, they see a tattoo I have and they'll say this guy is a shill, he's working for something, he's part of the Illuminati or whatever like that. I'm like, do you understand? I drive a Nissan and I coach Little League and when I finish talking at 9 p.m. I go home to my wife and we watch The Office until 10 p.m. and then I check email and it's just nothing. I mean, we need to be able to really continue to break the spell and realize that the internet and all these devices, these are useful tools to get through to certain things, to find certain things out. But the illusion that the front, that the presentation that people have on the internet is really who they are, that drives so much of what have how what kind of social problems we have right now.
Not only that, but the assumptions that people make without any, like, just it's really crazy. It's a crazy environment out there. It really is.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I know. Yeah. Hey, what a.
Hey, I'm just glad we talked about all this stuff tonight, because now I get to focus solely on talking about weather modification and geoengineering tonight on my show.
Ooh, I have so many things I can send you, Frank. I did a massive video about weather manipulation using CIA documents.
You're going to love this, because tonight's guest is Jim Lee, and he actually lives around he lives near Sumter, South Carolina.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he was right in the path of the hurricane. A lot of tonight's, once we get through basic history and all that stuff and science and I want to get around specifically to talk about especially Florence and all the anomalies and things that people like him had spotted, whether or not there's theories of whether or not Florence was actually steered by certain types of technologies out there.
It's coming back.
That's what I heard. That it it's relapsing. It's come. It's resurrected itself. It's coming back. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it literally is back. Literally, it's out. It's off the coast right now. It's kind of like reinvented itself as a new hurricane. A portion of it is broken off, and it's like right in the same exact space, and it's coming back. Dun dun dun. I made a vow with my husband. I will never leave my home again. Ever.
Yeah, that was rough for you and the kids.
Oh, I mean, my God.
That had to have been. I mean, I couldn't imagine just picking up and leaving New York for, what were you going for, over a week?
I was gone for two full weeks. Two wow. weeks. And I had been gone the week before that. So I was literally not home for 3 weeks.
Did you have a laptop with you? Or
I did. I had my laptop with me.
I don't even have that. I would be doing everything on an iPad for 2 weeks. That would have been hell.
It was really, it had its blessings, but it was also like, I got back and I have just been pounding this pavement since I got back. I have not stopped like at all. I've been working so hard just because, you know, I was off the grid for gosh knows how long. So it was hard, but I love what I do. I'm so passionate about it. Just like you, Frank, I love what I do. I spend every waking moment doing it. And that's the God's honest truth. Like, even when I say I'm not, I am. I can't stop myself.
Hey, that's why I stayed out of your way for the most part since you came back. I know there's a lot of catching up you had to do, so.
Yeah. But I'm so glad I'm back. I really am. So excited. And I guess that's a good place to wrap this for this week. Hey, thanks everyone for listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Not Guilty.
And Beans. You can find us on Google Play, Apple iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RadioInfluence.com. We will catch you next week.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Amber Geiger has been fired by Renee Hall, who is the black police chief there in Dallas, and she fired her because of adverse conduct. And I really had to do some research, figure out what was adverse conduct. She fired her because of adverse conduct after her arrest. So the definition of adverse conduct, according to Dallas police, is conduct which adversely affects the morale or efficiency of the department or which has a tendency to adversely affect, lower, destroy public respect and confidence in the department or police officers. So adverse conduct basically says, well, you made the police department look bad, so we are firing you. Now, of course, Geiger's attorney is saying, hey, this firing was premeditated. Of course, it was just a way to cave in and appease to the community. I don't know how I feel about that. I know typically that's not the way it would go. You'd get suspended. You would have the trial. And then if you're found guilty, you would be fired. So maybe there is some truth to it. Again, the police chief in Dallas is black. Renee Hall, the person that was shot in Botham, John, is black. The officer is white. So I can definitely see how her attorney is saying this was nothing more than an attempt to appease the black community that has Benjamin Crump and everyone else speaking out about this case.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.